Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Think Now Research Podcast. This is our monthly podcast in which we go over our most recent report. Think Now Research is a culturally integrated market research agency. We integrate Hispanic, African American, and Asian insights into custom market research for companies and government agencies looking to thrive in a changing demographic environment. You can find us on the web at thinknowresearch.com and on Twitter at thinknowtweets. My name is Mario Carrasco, co-founder and principal of Think Now Research, and I'm here today with Maribel Lara, member of Office of the CEO for VaynerMedia. Maribel, great to have you on the Think Now Research podcast.
It's good to be here.
Would you mind telling us a little bit more kind of about your role here at VaynerMedia?
Sure. So I have been at VaynerMedia a little over 3 years. I just celebrated my third Vaynerversary June 4th. I started out on the account, what was the account strategy side when I started at Vayner. So 3 years ago, we were still very heavily focused in social. We had a pretty built out creative department, so we were doing creative production. I worked on our PepsiCo portfolio with Quaker being my primary client and did that for about 2+ years. Then at one point was promoted to VP and moved over to our ABI InBev portfolio where I worked on US brands for a little while. And then about 9 months ago, our CEO, Gary Vaynerchuk, tapped me on the shoulder and said, like, hey, I have a curveball to throw to you. He said, I'm creating a new division at VaynerMedia that I'm calling the Office of the CEO. We're getting really big. So at the point we were over 700. Wow. We had 5 offices. We had just opened our first international office in London earlier that year. And he said, I find myself too much on defense and I want back on offense and I need a few people to help me scale myself across the agency and to lead forward projects that are really important to me. So he asked me to be one of those 4 individuals. So that's the job I've been doing. It's a lot of agency operations. So like just helping to run the agency. So connecting with the C-suite. So, you know, our chief operations officer, our chief heart officer, across the gamut, right? To just like answer questions that will move us forward as an agency holistically. And then I might tap into like any account where Gary like is interested in like the project that's going on there, to basically like help keep him updated on what's going on. And then a lot of it is just like keeping a pulse on the individuals at VaynerMedia. So we've always been very much about like, if we make our employees happy, our employees will do great work. Great work makes our clients happy and like keeps them our clients.
Yeah.
And so the only way you do that is by making the time to meet people individually. So like we're in our LA office right now. I'm based in New York. And myself, as well as the other 3 members of the OCEO, try to regularly come out here so that we're not like we know how they're doing as individuals, because that means like we have a good sense of how we're doing as an agency.
That's great. Yeah. And for the audience, so before joining this podcast, I listened to another podcast, Café con Pan, which you could hear Maribel's story, which is awesome. And we could spend this whole podcast talking about that as well. So I invite you guys to check that out.
Before we dive in, I'd like to thank our executive sponsor, Lucid. Lucid is the world's largest audience platform for sourcing and understanding human answers. Real deterministic data about human behavior at scale. The company has built the largest and most powerful programmatic survey marketplace and has enabled brands, agencies, and partners to ask and answer more than 14 billion questions worldwide. With a pool of 80 million plus unique respondents, Lucid delivers unprecedented access to consumers for data-driven decision-making about everything from marketing to product development in real time. Lucid is headquartered in New Orleans with offices in London and New Delhi.
We're going to be focusing today on our Think Now Media study, but I did want you to talk a little bit, if you can, before we jump into the data about the Amigos
Yeah.
kind of branch here at VaynerMedia and what that is and kind of what it does here within the organization.
Sure. So the Amigos Squad precedes me. So it's been at VaynerMedia. So VaynerMedia is 8 years old now. Amigos has probably existed for 4 or 5 years. In VaynerMedia's like infancy, and it's still very much part of our DNA today, we believe in having really like education centers in the agency that help proliferate information across the agency. And very early on, there was a recognition that the Hispanic audience was something that required us paying attention to. So we are not a multicultural agency in name, but we've always believed like you have to have a sense of like different populations within our larger population, because we more and more become a very multicultural general market, right? Like, we believe that general market doesn't mean white. Like, general market is a very diverse market. And so we have to, within our walls, reflect that diversity, because that means then the work will reflect the actual diversity. So the group was always focused on, you know, what's going on in the market right now, like what's advertising to Hispanics look like what's worth, you know, spending some time on, what can we learn from it, and like in general, what do we need to know about how that population is changing. So I joined that group pretty close to like when I joined VaynerMedia, and at the time it was like 5 individuals, and it was people who also wanted to learn more about the community, but didn't necessarily know it themselves. So I came into the group and I had a bachelor's degree in Spanish and Latin American studies. Like, I am Latina. I grew up in New York City, a very like Latino community. Yeah. And so I was like super passionate about like continuing to move it forward. Fast forward 3 years, that group is like 30 to 35 people. It's essentially a multidisciplinary brain trust of account folks, strategy folks, paid media, creative, both design and writing, and like all walks of earth. And we have like a core group that leads the agenda, having conversations with like Think Now, like to, you know, platforms that are changing the way that we think about Hispanic advertising. So we've had a lot of conversations with like the Me Too's of the world, to talk about like how our multicultural, you know, how are Latino millennials so different than like my generation growing up? Like, what does Latinx mean? Like, is Hispanic marketing still solely Spanish based? The answer is no, right? Like, and so thinking about how that applies to all the work that we do at VaynerMedia.
No, that's great. And that's why I invited you. I think that's actually how we connected. We had our webinar on the BIM, and you joined in and helped us out with some tech issues. But so it's great to have Maribel from VaynerMedia talk about the Think Now Media Study. For those of you following along, feel free to go to thinknowresearch.com, download our study, no cost. A little bit about the methodology. It's an online survey that we conducted last month among a representative sample of 500 Hispanics, 250 non-Hispanic whites, 250 American, and 250 Asian. And really, we're going to be going over kind of media consumptions, habits, streaming, video games. Media is super fragmented now, so it's kind of hard to define it, right? Like everything from mobile games to Netflix, Hulu. So the first slide with data that we're going to be going over is slide 6. And really, this is something we've done, I think, 3 years now, 3 or 4 years now, kind of getting a pulse on, you know, digital cable versus satellite, versus like fiber optic TV, broadcast. Anything jump out to you here, Maribel, in terms of, you know, the big takeaway, you know, after we asked what type of TV service do you receive in the home, digital cable is still the most popular type of TV service. I mean, from your perspective, VaynerMedia, is that something that you know, that you see?
Yeah, I mean, it's not surprising, right? Yeah. Like the access to quality, like it's just not as expensive to have the best quality that you can have. And so like we all want that. We all, I mean, we spend so much time like consuming media.
Yeah.
You want it to be the best quality possible. And so no, it's not surprising at all, especially when you start thinking about like the original programming that's coming from a lot of like cable specifically, like a lot of the cable providers, whether it be digital or not, but like the programming makes a difference too.
Yeah, definitely. And then just, I mean, pointing out some things that were interesting that kind of jumped out, directionally, African-Americans more likely to have,
digital cable. And then Asian Americans are significantly less likely to have satellite received at their home, which we thought was interesting. And we'll actually dig into some of the reasons here. Mm-hmm. Moving on to slide seven, we asked, how do you watch TV programming most often? And we looked at live TV, so when it airs on network TV, Netflix, YouTube, recorded via DVR, DVD, which I don't know why we asked DVD, that who has DVD? Amazon Prime and Hulu. And it looks like, interestingly, fewer than half of Americans say their primary way of watching programming is live network TV. But with the caveat being African Americans are the most likely to watch this way. And I have a theory on that we can talk about. And then
does it have to do with Twitter?
It has to do with Twitter. You got it. Yeah. I'm sure, yeah, you probably have validated that theory. And Asians are the least likely. So, again, probably not surprising to you.
Yeah, no, I think there's community around watching live TV. Like, yeah. Twitter in particular has changed. Like, for me, it's one of the things that keeps live TV going.
Right.
Everything gets ruined if you wait. Like, there are certain shows that I don't want ruined for me, and so I tend to watch them, like, right when they air or pretty close to.
Okay.
Right? Like, if it's network TV, we'll generally watch it. We'll start watching it at least a half hour after it started so that I can fast forward through the TV commercials.
Or just, like, not even touch your social media, right?
Exactly. But it's just, like, good luck, right? Like, I work in social media. Oh, like, true. Good luck isolating yourself from the spoilers.
Yeah.
But I think particularly around the African-American community, like, you've got some pretty big shows on network TV that have, that highlight African-American characters. And Black Twitter is a very strong community. Yeah. So it almost doesn't surprise me that you would do it, because it's not just about watching the programming when it airs, but it's about interacting with the community, in that, being part of that conversation as it's happening. Like, sure, you can go back and look at the stream because it would have been trending that night, but it's not the same thing as, like, sharing the moment as it's happening with the community.
Yeah, and I think, one of the things that's really interesting when we try to look at it is, like, how specific demographics or groups are driving trends at large, right? And
mm-hmm.
Black Twitter is big, of course, among the Black community, but they also drive Twitter in general conversation.
Yes.
Which I think is really interesting. Sure, like, African Americans and Black Twitter, I feel like probably the biggest driver of, like, this renaissance of live TV, right?
Mm-hmm.
And whether that's digital or, you have, like, even, like, Insecure, right, debuted last weekend, and that's something you can get from HBO Go. People are watching it live. So I think that's really cool, seeing a group kind of affect culture at large.
Absolutely.
Some other interesting thing, and this is something that we've seen kind of year over year, Asians over-indexing in YouTube. I thought that's really interesting. I mean, one of my thoughts there is that there isn't, not that it's necessarily driven by language, but there is, Asians, unlike Latinos, or we all share a common language,
mm-hmm.
there's not too much programming. There isn't any programming that can hit all Asians, right? Because there's so many different languages. But I think that's maybe one of the drivers is that on YouTube is where you can find content from really any language.
Well, and even if you go beyond language, right, just representation of people who look like you, like, we have a conversation about Latinos in media, Blacks in media, but, like, there's even less representation of Asian Americans in content. And so I wouldn't be surprised. Like, yes, I think language could be part of it, but I think also just seeking people who look like you, right, whose stories
really
are similar to yours, like, YouTube just creates, it's just more access to programming that's like created by people who, like, whose story you may connect with, and so that just may be a source for those stories.
Yeah, that's true, right? We Latinos, African Americans still have, a long way to go in terms of representation, but far more content.
Yeah.
The good thing is, though, the trend is, like, you know, we have Master of None, which is cool. We have, mm-hmm. you know, Fresh Off the Boat. So there is some movement there. But yeah, that's a good point. Just representation. So for those of you following along, moving on to slide 8. And I think this is one of the biggest changes that we've seen year over year. You know, looking at streaming services, and this is really kind of connecting all the dots that we're talking about, that streaming services like Netflix and YouTube becoming just as popular as live TV. And if we look at, you know, the different consumption patterns among the different groups, is Netflix especially popular among Hispanics. And then as we mentioned earlier, YouTube taking advantage, you know, of Asian Americans. I mean, I don't know, any thoughts into, well...
Well, what's super interesting to me about this is, like, a year from now, the way that you ask this question, or, like, this whole section is going to look really different, right?
Yeah.
Because now you're going to have to start talking about Facebook original programming.
And then
Twitter also is introducing original programming, right? So the expectation was, I think the last article I read was that you might see Facebook original programming as early as the end of this summer.
Wow.
It's not definite, but I think you'll definitely see it before the end of the year. Like, they've already signed on some shows, right? Twitter already announced some original programming at their Digital New Fronts in the spring. So, like, this whole thing could completely blow up.
Yeah.
Right? Like,
yeah.
It's guaranteed going to look different, because when you think about how much time people are already spending consuming video, particularly on Facebook, like, what's, you know, what happens when the Get Down, which people were really super sad to see, like, canceled on Netflix, like, what happens if Facebook picks that up?
Right. And then it's just, like, kind of thinking about it, like, philosophically, like, social media is media. And I mean, I guess it's always been media, but, like, now it's just...
Right, we have this tendency, like, we want everyone to stay in their lane. It's
yeah.
just like, but that's not how people consume. So, like, we're going to have a hard time continuing to say, like, this versus that. Like,
yeah.
to the person.
Yeah, yeah, no, that's totally true. I mean, what are your thoughts on, like, why, for example... Latinos slightly over-indexing in Netflix? Do you think it's, like, representation? Well, it's also a younger demographic. I mean, what do you think is at play there?
I mean, I think the younger, younger element of that demographic, certainly, right? Like, I
yeah.
want to watch it, and I want to watch it now, and I don't have to wait,
right.
you know, another week before I watch the second episode. So, you know, I think this ties very closely to the question, you know, the question you have later on in the study, which is about, like, how you consume and whether or not people binge watch.
Right.
You know, those platforms allow you to binge watch something.
Yeah.
And so I think because Latinos skew younger, it's just how people want it. I want the whole season. I don't want to have to wait week
yeah.
after week. You know, all of that ties back to, I don't want it ruined. You know, I want to watch it all before somebody, like, ruins the last, you know, the season finale for me. You know, I think original programming that's far more diverse. So, like, while some shows have been canceled, you know, I think Narcos, while we can debate whether or not it's Latino programming, right?
Right.
Like, you know, it is.
Yeah.
you know, Sense 8, which unfortunately canceled, but, like, also featured, you know, LGBTQ, like, it was a pretty diverse cast, like, pretty diverse storytelling, The Get Down. So I just think, like, you're getting more of the variety that you want to see in stories and in characters on the Netflixes of the world.
And I think you bring a really good point, because one thing I like to do in the podcast is, like, we have, you know, typically marketers that listen. What can marketers learn from the Netflixes of the world in terms of, you know, representation, diversity, stories? I mean, how do you connect that to marketing and messaging? And what you all are doing here at Vayner.
Yeah, I think it's no different, right? Like, what people want to consume coming from brands is also quality content. So you'll hear Gary talk about, like, the Facebook commercial, and he says it sometimes to be ironic. He doesn't mean commercial in the sense of, like, the commercials we watch on TV. He says Facebook commercial because the Facebook should clue you in that we're thinking about commercials a very different way, right?
Yeah.
Like, if you're putting into video or even into audio, right, with podcasts, content that people are truly interested in and that, like, pulls them in and will keep them there, it doesn't have to be 15 seconds long. If it's really good, they'll tune in for 7 minutes. They'll tune in for 15 minutes. And so it's almost, you know, Gary makes the comparison to radio really early on, where it was like they were radio shows.
Full-on stories.
They were full-on stories. And we're sort of back to that.
That's kind of cool.
People want brand integrated into content that is good.
Right. Now, that's really good. I mean, I love when marketers have that historical perspective, you know, and you're right. I forgot about that radio.
Yeah.
You know, I think of War of the Worlds, right? It was like multi-day content, right?
Right. Soap operas, right?
Yeah,
the origin of soap operas was literally like soap companies.
Right.
So
right.
Gary does a lot of the, like, he doesn't think that this is like new patterns of behavior. This is the same behavior, like, playing out on new
different
channels,
medium, right?
Different mediums.
Very cool. And I guess to that point, right, popularity of streaming services, we instead of breaking it out by ethnicity, we look at age too, right?
Mm-hmm.
What are driving that? And of course, streaming services driven by millennials and older viewers more likely to watch live TV. So if we take a look at Netflix, 77%
mm-hmm.
of 18 to 34 year olds watching Netflix.
I think Apple's going to be interesting to watch, right? Because they're just launching unique programming as well.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see a year from now whether or not they see a bump in consumption.
I mean, and they've already been creeping up too.
Mm-hmm.
I think one thing, you know, we didn't highlight Roku, but, you know, I think Roku is the most popular kind of streaming box.
Mm-hmm.
And they have pretty good numbers across the board, both, you know, for millennials, 12%, older, 35 to 54, 11%, and then even 55 to 64, 15%. So it's kind of cool to see Box is kind of breaking that for the older audiences too.
Yeah, and I think, like, if you look at Netflix, Hulu, Apple TV will be more that Amazon Prime, right? Like, these are today's networks.
Yeah.
This is the ABC, CBS... you know, NBC dynamic in our streaming world.
And to complicate things even further, I think now there's even, like, one of the cable companies you can seamlessly watch Netflix now. Like, when you have, like, if you have regular cable and you go through your channel guide, Netflix shows are going to pop up there too.
That's amazing.
So it's like everything is going to be intermeshed now, right?
That I'm really looking forward to that world, because right now it's like, what's on demand
hot
on the cable?
Spot,
I don't like that. Let me go to Netflix and see. Let me go to Amazon. Yeah.
I hear you. Yeah. I have the
I would like that
Roku.
Time back.
It makes it a little bit easier because you can search.
Okay.
But you still have to search and go through the different things. But yeah, I mean, at Amazon Prime, for those of you that downloaded our past reports, that's gone up significantly. Like, it used to be down where Google TV was in the teens, like 12%. Now you have, you know, 38% of millennials watching Amazon Prime. And to your point, it's driven by content, right?
Yeah.
They've been relentless in putting out good content
mm-hmm.
and trying to compete with Netflix, and they're taking share, which is cool to see.
I mean, they had original movies last year, too, right?
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't just programming, it was original movie. Didn't one of their films won an Academy Award?
They did.
Casey Affleck won, didn't
oh,
he?
Oh, you're right.
And it was an Amazon original movie.
It was.
Yeah.
Super depressing, but good. I once sat on a plane, and I was like, I shouldn't have done that.
Oh, jeez.
This is next for the next slide 10. This is, I think, one of the only companies that kind of track binge watching, which
that's crazy.
Yeah, that's people don't really track binge watching because we'd be like asking like how many shows or how many episodes do you watch in a week. And so the question we asked here, have you ever watched an entire season of one of your shows in one weekend or over the span of 1 week? And most adults say they've been binge watch at some point. Hispanic and African Americans most likely to binge watch. Asian Americans are the least likely to. I think back to Maribel's point, is probably driven by age. I don't know, what else do you think is going on here in terms of these, you know, specific groups that like to binge watch versus other groups?
Again, not like, you know, it's funny. I don't know why certain groups pop more than others. I think the behavior in general isn't necessarily like different from what it used to be, right? Yeah. It's just a matter of before you didn't have a choice what you binge watch. You were homesick.
True.
It was a rainy day, you stayed home on Saturday or Sunday, you binge watch whatever like was on TV, right? Like whatever marathon was on any given channel, like the Lord of the Rings marathon on TNT. Like you stayed home and you watched that, you now have more of a say over what you binge. So I think that's distinct. I don't think it's new behavior. I just think like where we're doing it and how much control we have over it is different.
No, that's a good point. And that's a point that I haven't really heard in the media, right? Because we always talk about binge watching, but you're right. It's something we've always done. Like if I think about, you know, when I stayed home sick from school, I would binge watch Jerry Springer, right?
Like, you know what the difference is? Like the digital streaming and the binge watching, like, we can track more. You can't track it. Like, people didn't think about it the same way.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it's an intentional action to put on Game of Thrones and watch it all the way, you know, watch 3 seasons.
Right.
In one sitting versus, like, you weren't intentional about turning to Friends on like whatever channel it was, you know, was playing the reruns back to back. You weren't necessarily thinking about it the same way, but like I don't think binging is new.
No, it's true. And I'm thinking about, I don't know why, my grandfather, he, you know, saw the Gigantes on all, when I'd go to his house,
you know, Saturday, all 5 hours.
Yeah, that's right, like, he was binge watching back in the day.
Or the Cantinflas movies, right? On the way, I think it's Sundays, Cantinflas movies, like, for several hours on Sunday. Yeah. Or Siempre Domingo. Or growing up, like the Kung Fu movies.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay.
Sunday Kung Fu marathons. Yeah. I think binging's always been here.
Yeah. And then the next slide here, we really just kind of talk about, you know, what's the average shows that people prefer to watch, or the average number of shows for people prefer to watch, and it's about 4. 4 seems like the magic number.
I over-index here.
Yeah.
I just did a Game of Thrones marathon a couple of weeks ago, and I was
Was it watching it for the second time?
It was. We were sort of like, the marathon was on in anticipation of the new season starting.
Yeah.
And we got sucked in, and I think we did, like, we took a staycation, and so we took one day of that staycation and, like, just watched the Game of Thrones
marathon. I've been wanting to, because you know, we're into Game of Thrones as well, and I was kind of lost, you know, like the recap
it's
is
so
complex.
Quick.
Yeah. Like I totally forgot about Arya's wolf being gone, right?
Yeah.
Like that whole scene. I'm
exactly.
Like, I have to go back.
And you go back and you pick up new things because they always drop so many hints. There's so much foreshadowing in that show. And so actually, if you go back and watch it, you'll pick up things that you didn't catch the first time around because you had no context for it. Especially if you didn't read the books.
Yeah, and I thought it was funny that, I don't know if you got that email, HBO email, to like, start watching now. You can start binge watching all the seasons now, and then it'll be like perfectly timed with the new release. So they're like encouraging binge watching.
Amazing.
So this, probably these next 2 slides, because we're hitting up on our time here, will be our next, our final slides, but I think this is a cool way to end on slide 12 and 13, talking about, you know, the future, where is this all going? And so we asked people to think about the near future, 2 to 3 years from now. How do you see yourself watching TV programming? And by 2020, nearly one third of consumers will be streaming most or all of their TV shows, which I think is probably conservative, right? Like, now that you're talking
about
Facebook.
It's only 3 years from now,
yeah,
right?
When you're talking about Facebook and Twitter,
yeah,
now you even have more. African-Americans, interestingly, and I love it when the data is consistent, right? They're adopting it at a slower rate, right? Maybe driven by some of those factors that we were talking about earlier, live TV, Black Twitter. I mean, but what do you think of this data? I mean, in terms of 2020, nearly one third of consumers be streaming most or all of their TV shows.
Yeah, it's not surprising at all. I agree with you. I think it's probably higher. I think it will be higher by then. This may change dramatically based on like how new players in the space will do, and what programming it is that they bring to the space. I think, you know, it's going to be really interesting to watch how that shakeup affects all of this.
Yeah, definitely. And looking at some other specific group things that we saw, looking at it by age and gender, female is much more likely to say that they're going to be streaming exclusively in the future, which I thought was interesting on slide 13. 39% of females saying they're going to stream exclusively versus 26% of males.
I think it's a time thing, and that's not specific to male versus female. Although, right, like we still skew with more, while there are more men staying home to take care of the kids, like it still skews much more women staying home to take care of the kids,
that's
which
a good
just
point.
Means like you're in more places. Your time is more fragmented.
Yeah.
And streaming has the flexibility of like I have my phone handy or I have my tablet with me. I can do it wherever I am. Right, like it can pick up on that thing that I haven't finished watching. So I think the more mobile we become, you know, people whose time is more fragmented, like streaming just fits better into your day.
Yeah.
It's a better usage of time.
I agree. And then another thing that I think, while it is a stereotype, but, you know, males more likely to be watching sports.
Which is live programming.
Which is live programming. Yep. So they're probably less likely to say that they're going to be watching it exclusively, because right now, you know, that's still, for some males, the only reason why they have, you know, they pay for live TV.
It'll be interesting to see, right? So we've talked about Twitter and Facebook original programming, whether or not, by that same token, then Twitter would over-index with men, because a lot of the original programming that they're introducing skews sports.
Right, yeah.
So that'll be interesting.
And I know, you know, sports has always been trying to go after the holy grail of getting women to watch and be engaged. I wonder if esports, this is going kind of forward, right? And some of the data we missed, but you can download the report and see this. You know, women are over-indexing in gaming, mobile gaming. So maybe esports might be a way to get women into the sports mix too.
Why
right?
not?
So, awesome. So that's all the time we have today. Thank you again, Maribel, for joining us. This is awesome. We can talk more about this. For those of you listening, again, you can download the report, download past reports, see how things have changed. Our next report's going to be on retail. Think Now Retail is going to be released in September of this year. And thanks again, everyone, for listening.
Lucid is the world's largest audience platform for sourcing and understanding human answers. Real deterministic data about human behavior at scale.